All right, let me jump on into today's opening monologue, the Right Side Way monologue, brought to you every single day by attorney Stan McDonald. Stan McDonald, a partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee, a 30-year vet in the practice of law, and yes, indeed, your daily sponsor of the Right Side Way. I'll tell you more about Stan here in just a few minutes. All right, I just talked about it briefly a moment ago. I've been watching the news. I know most of y'all have too, but if you've been watching the news for even a little bit, you're seeing images out of California that just boggle the mind. Left-wing agitators and immigration apologists are constantly, even violently, attempting to interfere with federal law enforcement for daring to actually work to enforce the laws related to illegal immigration. Yesterday, in a tear gas-filled, full-on riot, left-wing protesters swarmed to a pot farm. A pot farm. Let that sink in. A pot farm. Where armed ICE agents with National Guard support were serving immigration warrants and seeking to arrest illegals that were working the pot farm. Got out of hand real quick as pink-haired liberals waving foreign flags were blocking the roads, climbing on law enforcement vehicles, and assaulting officers. Helicopter video also shows that there was one individual in the crowd who appears to have actually pulled out a gun and fired it at law enforcement as he ran away. We're getting reports today that of the roundup that all the people they rounded up that day at the pot farm, that there were 9 unaccompanied minor illegal immigrants on the scene. So is this now child endangerment as well? At the same time all this is going on, we're seeing the similar reports of anarchy in places like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Portland. Meanwhile, California Governor Gavin Newsom was all the way across the nation in South Carolina campaigning against Trump for reasons no one can fathom. And LA Mayor Karen Bass, she held a press conference this week. A woman, by the way, who is so out of her league that she has become a living meme. But she held a press conference like Baghdad Bob and announced that these riots never actually happened. Really? Also, meanwhile, the mayor of Chicago just announced that he's directing city officials not to cooperate with ICE and asking for the city council to actually pass a resolution to that effect. Multiple arrests have been made, most recently, of anarchists who recently conducted a coordinated ambush of law enforcement who were attempting to round up illegals. Let's be clear. The reasons why we are seeing a 500% increase in assaults on federal law enforcement is because the progressive left is willing to commit violence, number one, and the progressive left leadership, number two, is willing to turn a blind eye at best, even encourage it at worst. This is all preventable, though. Every bit of this is all preventable. But left-wing leaders are going to have to weigh in and make themselves heard and tell the agitators in their party's base that violence and mayhem are never acceptable. In these great American cities, liberal left-wing lunatics are burning things down while liberal left-wing leaders are just fiddling. I mean, it's possible to be in a bad situation and actually still keep order. It is. But it takes leadership. It takes the will of the people to do so. I had an experience once during the early days of the war in Afghanistan. I've told you before, I was there just after the invasion on a small special operations team, living for a year among the Afghan people. My 6-man team and a U.S. Army Special Forces team, we were together in a remote region just hours away from any other military base. And in Afghanistan, everywhere we looked, there was devastation. If it wasn't devastation caused by a near decade of Taliban thuggery, then it was leftover destruction from the days of the Soviet occupation. Landmines were everywhere. Old destroyed tanks and armored vehicles lay by the sides of the roads and in ditches. Scraps of weapons here and there, and farmers who sometimes had to choose to plow or not plow based on where they could remember that bombs might still be in the ground in their fields. Basically, the detritus of war was commonplace. So much so, really, that the people of the country just, like, lived among it. The people got numb to it. I once saw a full-size bridge spanning the Kokshar River in northeast Afghanistan. And the abutments on each side of the bridge were made out of former Soviet tanks who had been dragged into place and their hulls filled with dirt and used to make the base for the bridge. That's crazy. I have pictures of kids playing on old destroyed armored personnel carriers like it was part of a playground. My headquarters was well south to Kabul. My team's area of operations was in the north past the Hindu Kush Mountains. Hindu Kush, by the way, is a term or a name that means the blood of the Hindus, because it was said that in centuries past, invaders from the south in what is now India and Pakistan died trying to get over those mountains. Epic snow-covered peaks so high that the rarefied air made it nearly impossible to fly military helicopters over them. But on a few occasions, I had to come in from the field for headquarters business. And it was no small thing to get there. But on one occasion, My guys and I made it down, and then we got stuck. We had no air assets to move us back north. We were locked down. My team was still out there. After 5 days, I finally convinced my commander that if he would just give me 2 old Toyota trucks from the motor pool, I would head north overland myself. This was no small thing, by the way, but we did it. And for quite a while, myself and one other guy on my team were some of the only Americans to have traveled the length of the route over the Hindu Kush by way of the highest tunnel complex in the world that was built by the Soviets. It's called the Salang Pass Tunnel. It was high adventure, let me tell you. We had no interpreter with us, just a handful of Americans, including one intrepid reporter from the New York Times who heard what we were doing and he wanted to tag along. Yeah, we passed through, here's my point, we passed through every war-torn village and bombed-out structure that we could find on the way north, it seemed like. But I'll never forget one village way up high in the mountains, well above the rest of the world, it seemed. And as we drove into the village, it had beautiful fields of cultivated sunflowers and crops growing beside a rushing mountain stream with little ornate stone footbridges. Even traditional small brown mud brick homes stacked on the hillsides and perched above the streams all seemed to be well-kept and beautiful. It was like a postcard. The place was unreal. I told one of my guys I felt like we had just disregarded the war and driven right into Shangri-La. But you know what the real difference was? And here's why I tell that story. The real difference was we were in a dangerous place where war had been going on for 20 years, where there was destruction and devastation everywhere. But in that one village right there, the people really cared, and their leaders really cared. And they cared enough not to live like everybody else did. The villagers there cared, and they would not succumb to the mindset that this is just how it is. They didn't do that. They took care. They had pride in their homes. They lived with the understanding they could not change the world, but they could change where they lived. And it was so evident. I'd love to go back, by the way, and see it one day under different circumstances. But here's the thing. Here's my point in telling you that story. My point is that the people of any community do not have to just settle for disruption and disorder. They don't. While I'm not a fan of big government and attempts by too many in office to expand the scope of government, I can tell you that I do fully acknowledge there is a role for government and to provide for the common defense, support the general welfare, ensure domestic tranquility. Those are written into our founding documents. But too often right now, leftist liberals especially feel that their role in various positions is just to make life easier for the criminals and then harder for the law-abiding citizens and even the law enforcement. Too often it's the law-abiding citizens who become like the vast number of Afghans that I knew in Afghanistan, who just begin to finally accept that there's nothing they can do. It's just societal upheaval. We just have to live with it. But that village in the mountains that I told you about, they got it. They knew. They did not have to settle. That's why I'm a fan of what some people call broken windows policing. The social science theory that's known as broken windows holds that if a window in a building is broken out and not repaired, then before you know it, the rest of the windows will also be broken, and just one unrepaired broken window is a signal that nobody cares, and so breaking more windows apparently costs nothing. There's no penalties. It's like a visible sign of crime, antisocial behavior. And then it rises to civil disorder. It creates an environment that encourages further crime and disorder, eventually leading to more serious and even deadly crimes. The theory of broken windows suggests that policing methods that will actually target minor crimes like vandalism, loitering, public drinking, jaywalking, it actually helps to create an atmosphere of order and lawfulness. It was this theory of broken windows that Mayor Rudy Giuliani used to clean up New York and return it to the jewel of the world, and then just the opposite was done years later by Mayor de Blasio, who just basically tore law and order apart to make it hard for tourists to even want to go there. And now you have things going on in California, where everybody who's on the wrong side of the law feels empowered to stay on the wrong side of the law and intervene with law enforcement, even fight with law enforcement, because nobody on the left will tell them no. Basically, the broken windows theory, it's a community that will say to the criminal elements that disorder and crime and violence will not be tolerated. Because we live here. Because this is our home. Because we care. And you can see the effects of soft-on-crime policies and the empowerment of the left, the violent liberal left, in places like Atlanta, Chicago, San Francisco, and yes, even right here in our own state in Birmingham. And for too long, the people of these great American cities have just capitulated. It's as if they believe there's nothing they can do. They just live with it because, well, you know, just because. But law and order, it matters. It's about quality of life. It's about having the ability to actually say yes to all the right things. And if a village in the high places of Afghanistan can make itself look like a postcard, then we can too, right here at home. It's about leadership. And the left has to speak out and call a crime a crime. That's what it takes. Because this is our house, and it matters. And the leftist liberals are just fiddling while their cities burn. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way.